you may be right. And welcome to the Morning Edge. I'm Floyd J. Winters, and here is Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. It's not a celebration, it's a memory. This is the final day, historically, 150 years ago, of the death of Lincoln. He survived from April 13th to April 15th in a nearly dead state, bleeding on a bed in a rooming house across from the theater. Blackwater crews given long terms for killing Iraqis, contractors, men among several private American security guards who fired into Baghdad's crowded Nasser Square on September 16th of 07, and last October they were convicted of killing 14 unarmed Iraqis. And you know, this whole thing, wow, we just have a way of contracting us, privatizing ourselves into one damn mess after another. Lincoln left behind us a situation of racism that never quit for quite a while. He was killed, and in the South, several people cheered. Some people were crying. The people who were oppressed were doing the crying, and the people who lost their livelihood off the backs and sweat and the blood of slaves were angry and were cheering. JFK, do you remember people in the South on both both sides of the situation? They cheered too. That was seen, people cheering. And what do people cheer for? What are they cheering for when they do that? Right now we've got a Congress that's out to sabotage the power of the president. I'm sure people would cheer that. They'd rather go to war and kill a bunch of people. That's a good idea. I tell you, Floyd, this is...
Interesting thing happened, though, about Congress.
Yeah, that is...
Right now, Obama is trying to drop Cuba from the anti-terror list.
Yeah.
And they're not fighting him on that yet. They will bring it up to the floor, but it looks like he's going to win that. We may normalize relationships in the end with Cuba. If you want to... There is an old expression, you know, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. If you want to have Cuba behave, having them have ties with the United States may be the best way of doing that. Normalizing relationships. Bush, when George W. Bush was president, he normalized relationships with North Korea with the intention of hopefully that would allow them to curtail their nuclear weapons program. North Korea. And yet we can't normalize relationships with Cuba, but Congress is...
Well, we can't do it with Iran either.
Congress is going a little bit lighter on that issue, and that's kind of a positive sign. Now, in the end, you're going to have these presidential candidates stand up and take a stand. No, we can't do it. Cuba's a terrorist nation. There's no recent terrorist...
We just took them off the list, Floyd.
Yeah. There's no...
And that was a presidential order.
Yeah. Well... But there's no evidence that they really are supporting terrorism now. People will say that. I think, in a sense, people can make more evidence that the United States is supporting terrorism more than Cuba. We overthrew a government in Iraq that was not involved in 9/11. We caused hundreds of thousands of deaths in the end, some of them 4,000 Americans. They weren't involved in it. That was basically terrorism. We caused Saddam Hussein to be overthrown and killed as a direct consequence. And for what reason? So who's really sponsoring terrorism?
Well, you know, let me ask a trivia question to the audience out there, if you're out there listening. Who is the largest employer in the United States in the federal government? Perhaps not just the federal government, the largest employer in the United States. And I'll leave that question out for you. It's 941-745-1490. 3.2 million people in this one area. If you have any ideas on that, we'll invite you in for an interview into the show if you like, or just a long conversation on what other opinions you may have about that and what part of what that costs us and so on. But that's a trivia question for the morning.
I'm hoping that we'll see, though, a little cooperation with Congress. There's so many things they can accomplish.
Well, right
if
now,
the Democrats and Republicans will work together, we need them to happen on both ends. both sides of the political...
Well, that's one of those should-be arguments, isn't it? And they should do it, but they don't do it. The Congress right now has formally muscled its way into the presidential negotiations with Iran, creating new and potentially dangerous uncertainties for an agreement that offers the best chance of restraining that country's nuclear program, which goes along with what you're saying.
Hey, I've got an interesting clip on that. There's two individuals I'm sure you know. One's called Pat Buchanan, and the other one's called Sean Hannity. Now, basically, you would consider both of those to be on the same side mm-hmm. in many situations.
I know where Pat's at.
And there's a really cool interview with those two people, and I'd like to play it for you.
No, let's do that.
Because we're talking about Iran, mm-hmm. and let's hear if they're in agreement. I'm going to see if I can call this up. So Pat Buchanan, as you know, ran for president when...
He's on the McLaughlin Group every Sunday.
Yeah, and he's an interesting... Mm-hmm. But he ran for president... When Al Gore ran.
He's the guy that had questions about the vote in the 2000 election, the Gore v. Bush situation, that he totally disbelieves the vote count in what was West Palm, I think it was.
Yeah, we're trying to get our computer to work right here.
That's all right. Well, I'll talk a little more about the Iran thing when
Yeah, let's see if we
that.
Can get this up, because right now we're...
That's all right. Mr. Obama initially threatened to veto the legislation. He backed off rather than face a bipartisan override of his veto. The administration did get some compromise. That's the veto of the negotiations that have been conducted by John Kerry. And so he pulled the rug out from under John Kerry in appealing to the Congress to not go ahead with this 19-0 vote, including Democrats, to make the Congress decide on the sanctions removal and or not and how quickly. But in fact, the sanctions were initiated through the Congress in the first place, so in a way, they do have a say in this whole thing. In any case, the Senate committee's action puts him in a weakened position as the only leader involved in negotiations who may not be permitted to fully honor committee's commitments that were already made. The nuclear deal is the product of a multinational negotiation with Iran conducted by the United States, France, Britain, China, Germany, and Russia. In no other country has the legislative body demanded the right to block the agreement. And even if Congress barred Obama from waiving American sanctions, the European Union, the United Nations Security Council could lift the sanctions they impose, thus undercutting our position. So if you want to weaken the United States, just follow this kind of nonsensical oversight by our Congress. The United States and Iran have been bitter adversaries since the 79 revolution and 1953 as well, when we overthrew their government. But anyway, the Senate committee will heighten Iranian suspicions and complicate the final stretch of arduous negotiations that are scheduled to resume next week. Every president has negotiated similar agreements as part of executive authority. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee has wrongly and inappropriately diminished the president's power to conduct the nation's foreign business as he was elected to do. So are you ready with this?
Actually, what happened in the clip, our studio is blocking that particular clip. I have a second clip I think of interesting. This is an 8-minute clip. And I found it really profound
Theo Van Gogh.
To listen to it. Yeah. Yeah, Theo Van Gogh was killed because of his discussing or having pictures and caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad.
And he mocked he did his cartoons that mocked the Prophet. And he's not a Muslim. He's perhaps a Christian or maybe he's an atheist. But his right to free expression was taken away. He finally was murdered.
So let's listen to this little clip, see if this will play for us.
Yeah.
And
he's a relative of Vincent.
Do you know what's happening? We're being blocked all the way.
What is happening?
The
here?
Studio is blocking each of my videos that
really?
I have, each of the online links that I have.
Hmm.
So
well, we can talk.
I'm not sure
why it's doing that. What was the...
That's the second one.
Yeah.
So I got to find out why...
So we're
default.
Doing a search to determine our permission to broadcast. So we're being censored right now by within the operation of this show.
That's
in any case, I can talk a little bit. Who was what was the killing just recently in France of the
Charlie Hebdo?
Charlie Hebdo, and so the Muslims are intolerant to free speech. So they're basically thought police and religious thought police to boot. Have you ever talked to someone who will not talk to you about things they disagree with? They won't even get into the conversation. That's political. That's religious. They want they slam down the censor discussion. I'll go into the 28 pages is another form of censorship.
Oh, that's a great one.
So the 28 pages is now Bob Graham is starting to talk about. I don't have the article in front of me now, but he was interviewed by the New York Times on the issue of the 28 pages. Looks like we may have a caller. But the 28 pages were arbitrarily taken out on the 9/11 investigation. And we've had Harley Schlanger from the LaRouche Group on the show before talking about the missing 28 pages. They weren't just lined out redactions here and there. They were just simply blocked. So this is the situation we're in. Do we have a caller?
We have a caller. This is Pat on the air.
Okay.
And Pat, you're live on 1490 AM. Welcome.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I think it's the what we call the Defense Department who has the biggest budget, but it's a misnomer to call it a Defense Department. It should be called a War Department. And I've got to go, but I just wanted to make that comment.
The War. Thank you, Pat. That's wonderful. The War Department.
Well, that was the original name when Washington took over. And the first cabinet members, it was the Secretary of War, and they changed that after.
Well, and that's more accurate to call it the War Department because we're warring on everybody. They call us the policemen of the world, mockingly, like our acting president was Ronald Reagan, pretending to be a president, pretending to be a defender of our rights is what a Defense Department. This is a who was that guy that talked about words that didn't mean anything that. Said this means that and this means the other thing, and we never knew what words what meant. Animal Farm and all of those things. I mean, this is the bizarre nature of today. We're in a joke, pretending to be a government, and people who don't believe in government wanting to be president of the non-government. I saw Grover Norquist this morning on Morning Joe talking about the vow to cut taxes, cut government. Therefore, you cut government enough, you don't have government. You have chaos. You have the Tea Party. You have all the nutty stuff. I mean, you know, the Tea Party people who have the cardboard on their chest saying, government, don't touch my Medicare. That's what government is, Medicare. And what were they talking about on Morning Joe this morning? Cutting Medicare, cutting Social Security, reforming it, of course. They really mean privatize it. You know, privatizing things does it better. Profit for health care is why we are in the mess we're in right today. Medicare costs us 4 pennies on the dollar to operate. That is, there's no money broker involved, no insurance company to pay profits to and to pay big salaries to. 32 cents on the dollar. That's eight times more expensive than Medicare. All of the other private health care systems we have today cost us 800% more than Medicare costs. So I'm hoping that the latest appearance of Mr. Yesterday, that is Mr. Rubio Marco, who's saying, I'm for today, not yesterday. And it's interesting, he goes back to his deceit about saying he was a Cuban who escaped Castro, which is untrue. And then he was born in 57. His parents were here before he was born. He wasn't impregnated in Cuba and brought over that way.
Marco Rubio was impregnated?
His mother. His impregnation. He wasn't conceived.
Oh, good, because I would have voted for him. He would have gotten my vote right away.
But he's, and now you've got Ron Paul yelling, the sky is falling, the sky is falling, the economy is going to collapse any moment, folks. And he's running big ads to that effect, and if you latch on to that, it's all about this massive, massive debt, the $18 trillion, most of which was from unemployment, lack of funds coming from to the government from payrolls that people were working, making some kind of a living. Went from $12 trillion when G. Wiz left office to 18 during the depression or recession that we had to go through thanks to G. Wiz, not thanks to Obama. So, but since in the last year, there's the average of about 250,000 jobs have been created every month, dropping the average unemployment rate to 5.5%. The whole ball game is such that we have this circumstance that the joke is on Grover Norquist and his friends, the Republican Party, who signed on to his thing of cutting things, sequestration, sledgehammering every part of the government and the spending in the government. Don't build your roads. Don't build your infrastructure. Don't build your education. Cut your taxes to the 1% some more. They pay so little now, it's ridiculous. When you hear Buffett and Gates say, I will pay whatever tax rate you put on me, no question. These people have no problem with that. But then you have the pillar people worried about Hillary and how she's conducting her low-key campaign, or the missing emails and all of that, and she has gotten herself in a sticky wicket, because that's going to be overblown, just like Benghazi was overblown. And another trivia question: who did the killing in Benghazi, and where were the four diplomats killed? Were they killed in the streets of Benghazi? Were they killed in the embassy? Where were they killed, and who was there to protect them? So, and is that Hillary's fault that happened? Of course it's her fault. It's because she didn't reveal her emails. Well, the nonsense that passes for political opinion is just that. But coming back to the Blackwater, the men had been among a private, these men were, let's see, one by one, former Blackwater security contractors wearing blue jumpsuits and leg irons stood before a federal judge on Monday and spoke publicly for the first time since the deadly 07 shootings in Iraq. The men had been among several private American security guards who fired into Baghdad's crowded Nusayr Square on September 16th of 07, last October. They were convicted of killing 14 unarmed Iraqis in what prosecutors called a wartime atrocity. Yet on Monday, as they awaited sentences that they knew would send them to prison for most, if not all, their lives, they defiantly asserted their innocence. "I know for a fact that I will be exonerated in this life and in the next," says Paul Slow. "I'm very sorry for the loss of life, says Dustin Hurd. "But I cannot say in all honesty to the court that I believe I did anything wrong. As God is," and that's Dustin Hurd, "as God is my witness," Evan Liberty said, "he fired only at insurgents who were shooting at him." "The verdict is wrong," said Nicholas Slayton, a former Army sniper who was convicted. You remember American Sniper, the movie? Mm-hmm. I wonder if he was the same kind of person doing what that guy did.
Well, these guys were literally paid mercenaries.
They're contractors. And they dress just like our soldiers. So when you see them out, except for the chevrons on their shoulders, you don't know them from an American soldier.
Well, they had less control. There was less control from the government. And as a consequence, the government could say there were fewer soldiers in the Middle East. So they hired a huge army of
Almost
contractors.
One for one.
Yeah, it was unprecedented as far as the size.
Well, we don't
of the
want a draft, Floyd. We do not want a draft. We want to contract our wars. That's called mercenary wars.
And that's
we
exactly
want
what
mercenary
we did.
Wars.
Most Americans have no idea of the huge numbers, hundreds, tens of thousands of contractors were hired and paid out there during the war. Anyway, audio. I finally got this audio up.
Oh, let's go.
Let's see if we can get this going. So we're blocked here from YouTube. I don't know why the studio blocks this and censors us,
okay.
But it's an interesting thing. Now, I'm going to stop this a couple ways through, and if you want to call and give your thoughts on this particular little audio, feel free to call us at 941-745-1490. I'm not going to take a pro or a con on this. I just want you to listen and provoke some thought.
In the West, and are concerned with Islam and the Islamization of your country, this video has a message for you. What Islam Is Not was published in the frontpagemagazine.com on April 21, 2008, and is an adaptation from a book written by Dr. Peter Hammond, Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam. What Islam Is Not. Islam is not a religion, nor is it a cult. In its fullest form, it is a complete, total, 100% system of life. Islam has religious, legal, political, economic, social, and military components. The religious component is a beard for all of the other components. Islamization begins when there are sufficient Muslims in a country to agitate for their religious rights. When politically correct, tolerant, and culturally diverse societies agree to Muslim demands for their religious rights, some of the other components tend to creep in as well. Here's how it works. As long as the Muslim population remains around or under 2% in any given country, they will be, for the most part, regarded as a peace-loving minority and not as a threat to other citizens. This is the case in United States, Australia, Canada, China, Italy, and Norway. At 2 to 5%, they begin to convert from other ethnic minorities and disaffected groups, often with major recruiting from the jails and among street gangs. This is...
That's interesting. They're saying they're recruiting Muslims from jails. Is that true, Augie? What do you think?
Well, don't you remember Farrakhan? And he became a Muslim. And Muhammad Ali, that Cassius Clay, he went from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali.
Well, was that because Cassius Clay, was he sent to jail?
Well, he wasn't sent to jail, but he
was stripped of his title. He was forbidden to fight. I think he did go to jail for a short time.
Well, they were threatening him in jail for being a draft dodger, not willing to go to the military.
And it wasn't that he didn't want to go to the military. He did not want to go to Vietnam. He didn't see the sense of that. I listened to him in person. He was a surprisingly good speaker, and he wasn't opposed to defending the country. But he saw some issues in Vietnam, which I also did, that just weren't making sense. And so, there was Muhammad Ali, there was Farrakhan, there was Malcolm X, who became Muslims. But
then most of them rejected all of that because they felt they were being used, which is what this woman is saying.
And that was part of what happened to Malcolm X when he started to reject that. He actually got himself shot. Not by whites. Malcolm X was shot by... He was assassinated.
But they were... I'm trying to think of the leader at the time who he made comments on and criticized, and that was his death sentence. And obviously this person speaking is going to that very issue. Here you have a low... As long as you have a low percentage of Muslims, they keep their head down. The minute they get their head up, it's just like the conversation we had with John Loftus, if you recall. The financing of the mosques comes out of Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia and the kingdom, if you will, they finance that, and then they, as part of the low mortgage financing, they stipulate who the imam is, and so he goes out and he preaches Wahhabism, which is extreme versions of Mosaic law, which is called Sharia. They're one and the same, folks. The same thing that the Jews have gone away from in terms of the moderates and liberals, the Muslims embrace through Muhammad, who was born in 570 AD after the death of Christ. He didn't precede Christ. And you have a situation now today where they use their growth in numbers as a political powerhouse. Germany has a large influx of Turkish Muslims. France has Muslims of all variety in big sections down in Avignon and other places. And in Britain, Great Britain, there is a strong, virulent part of, so their population has grown enough that they feel confident that they can act out against the society they're in.
And you're going to hear about the France in Britain, and she goes through piece by piece, country by country, what's happening. But the one issue is what's happening in our prisons. Is unfortunately
they're recruiting there.
They're recruiting in prisons. They're recruiting people who are obviously disenchanted with society.
Why would you be? My goodness. I mean, I can't imagine anyone being disenchanted in our prison system.
So these are people who don't have the highest ethics, people who don't mind murdering, robbing, killing individuals.
Well, every time you have a group who want to take power, where do they go? They go. They either through ministers. And or imams or whatever, they go to the poorest of the poor, the most oppressed. And where are those people? In the 2.5 million numbers we have, they're in our prison system. They come out if they're no longer committing the usual kind of crime and drug dealing and what have you, or using pot to go to jail. 60% of the people are in there for using pot. I mean, what a stupid society
but
we are.
But here, you've taken away their rights. You put them in jail. Legitimately, in many cases, I do question putting them in jail for possession of pot. And it's that
well, even minor possessions, Floyd, oxycodone, codeine, all these are prescription drugs. And if you use those illegitimately, whatever that's supposed to mean, you need someone said, here, take one of my oxycodone, or you take one of my codeines. You take any of those two pills, and you haven't had a prescription, and they find out you did that, you're committing a felony.
Not if you're Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, well, that's always the exception.
Not if you're Rush Limbaugh. So, yeah. Anyway, it's. I think there's some validity there, because they've shown a number of these people who have gone rogue, have been in prison at one time.
Yeah.
And so let's continue listening to this.
Well, the communists did it, too. So.
Yes, it's happened. Even Hitler was in jail. There's been a lot of cases.
When the French Revolution hit, they opened the jails, and all those people became revolutionaries.
Happening in Denmark, Germany, United Kingdom, Spain, and Thailand. From 5% on, they exercise an excessive influence in proportion to their percentage of the population. For example, they will push for the introduction of halal food, which is clean food by Islamic standards, thereby securing food preparation jobs for Muslims. They will increase pressure on supermarket chains to feature halal on their shelves, along with threats for failure to comply. This is occurring in France, Philippines, Sweden, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Trinidad and Tobago.
So they're saying France right now has almost 8% Muslim population. Now, France was
It's been estimated as much as... I've been to France, and I've seen the markets where the entire market, like Saturday morning markets, fruit markets, vegetable markets, all Muslim. Muslim.
Well, they have these Muslim enclaves. France was a colonial empire. They conquered a lot of Africa. With their machine guns and their warplanes, they were able to beat these Africans who did not have guns and did not have access, and they took over these colonies, mm-hmm. notably Algeria. And they fought this long, basically, a Vietnam War in Algeria. They also fought a Vietnam War in Vietnam as well until 1957, where they defeated by the Vietnamese in Battle of Dien Bien Phu, and they pulled out. They had taken a number of countries in Africa over. They voted. Should we continue? They actually put it to a popular vote. Should we continue our war in Algeria? And the people said no, and they actually pulled out. It was hard to believe Charles de Gaulle actually put up to a popular vote, do we want to continue this foreign policy of being a colonial nation? And some of these, and the French said no. The costs were much greater than the rewards. Businesses were making money, but the people were being hurt. But afterwards, they allowed immigration from these countries that were former French territories into France.
Or colonies.
French colonies. Mm-hmm. And there are currently huge enclaves in France that are almost entirely Muslim. And
well, huge is you have 60 million people or so in France, and the population isn't getting old like they are in Germany, isn't like they're getting old in Italy. Some of those other countries are declining. Russia, for example, is going to drop from 120 million to 110 million by 2020. That's part of what's happening to Russia. They're drying up and blowing away like the feathers in the wind. But France is the population is being propped up, as you say, Floyd, by these large numbers, about 11 million.
Yeah, there's this immigration. Yeah, something like that. It's mm-hmm. it's large, and some of these communities are 90% Muslim, or just a large amount.
Well,
and
in Paris, Charlie Hebdo thing was they're the Muslims are mainly located. The Arab youth, if you will, are located in the suburbs, and in the suburbs, there are not like our suburbs. They're more run down. Tenement housing was built for the poor, so that's where they've located. And there's no you have building upon building on big tracts of land with no roads in between. So they're hard to police. So you have these big grassy areas and trees and so forth. So it's park-like in one way, but you have these gangs ruling everything. and running, and they're unemployed. They're easy to recruit because their future is in question. The one thing they don't have in France was a long-term jailing of people. That is, the average, I think, jailing time of a major criminal is like 8 years. Here we've got much bigger numbers.
Oh, we're good at putting people. We lead the world. Something like 2.3 million people we have in prison. But anyway, let's continue a little bit more on this little audio that we have here. And feel free to comment if you want and call us at 941-745-1490. So they're mentioned in France. Their figure is 8%, but it's in the millions.
At this point, they will work to get the ruling government to allow them to rule themselves within
Arabia.
Their ghettos under
wow.
Sharia, the Islamic law. Mm-hmm. The ultimate goal of the Islamists is to establish Sharia law over the entire world. When Muslims approach 10% of the population...
Now, is that the ultimate goal of the Muslims, to actually have Sharia law over
yes,
the entire world?
But it's the Sunni Muslims. You've got to... There's an important distinction between the Sunni and the Sharia, the Shia. The Shiites are... Two-thirds of Iraq are Shiites in the southern portion. Almost all of Iran is Shiite. They are not that way. They have their own problems, authoritarian government. But in the case of Sunnis, they're affiliated in ISIS and Al-Qaeda. All of that is affiliated with Saudi Arabia and the madrasas and the Wahhabism that's taught there. It's all built off of Sharia. And the strict application of Sharia is, if your right hand offends you, we'll cut it off, or if it offends me. And if your head bothers us, we'll cut it off. If your eye bothers us, we'll gouge it out. And if you're too much of a problem, and we want to display you as too much of a problem, we'll hang you in the public square. And they do this randomly and constantly. And when, by the way, if you want a slow stadium death, will set you up, woman or man, and will blow your head off in front of people. And if that's not fun enough, we'll stone you in front of people till the stones pile over your dead and dying body. These are the things that happen in Saudi Arabia constantly. A woman who wants to drive has to have a man in the car, running the car, driving the car. A woman has to wear clothing out in public. The joke is that when the wealthy Saudis leave an area and get on a plane, they rip off their clothes and get into Western garb immediately. They want to meld in with the civilized part of the world. So it's a joke, and the jokes, and our best friend, our Saudi friend, is the one we have to protect, because they bought and sold our oil companies, and they run your taxes up on your gasoline prices, and they run the price up accordingly.
Hey, we have a caller. Do you have a comment? This is a person called Lawrence. Welcome, Lawrence.
Good morning, Lawrence.
What's your thoughts?
Good morning, August. Good morning, Floyd J. You're talking about Saudi Arabia, August. It sounded like you were talking in a negative tone about their positions and actions that they've been taking in the world. Did I misread that?
You sure did not. You're right. You did not miss that.
Okay. Then I was wondering, in that particular case, you not being a positive opinion of them, how do you reconcile them contributing to the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Rodham Clinton accepting the money, not giving it back, and keeping it?
I totally agree. If your import is, should they give it back, I would agree with you. They should. They shouldn't accept that. Absolutely.
Yeah,
so you would support them? You would still support her
situation? The problem I have, Lawrence, is that you're looking at a situation. They are infecting and trying to influence each and every candidate. So all the candidates are going to have that same influence. So at some point, she's going to have to openly reject and make it, and I hope she does it, because you're right. That's what should go back to them for obvious reasons. But yeah, go ahead.
And I agree with Lawrence and with Augie in this situation. I think we're in agreement. But here's an interesting question I have for Augie. didn't one of his presidents, George W. Bush, receive money from the Arabs? Weren't there numerous photographs of George W. Bush holding hands with the king of Saudi Arabia? Lawrence,
To go on with your point, Prescott Bush, the grandfather, colluded with the Saudis and the Nazis to go after the Jews, to encourage the killing of the Jews in Germany and the genocide therein. So this is the people that are trying to corrupt our country in terms of confusion through the Republican Party supporting them, and Bush, baby Bush, is a Saudi king or prince of Saudi, and the Bush family has been married politically to the Saudis way too long, and the oil companies therein. This is a joke. And so when you use some donation from the Saudis to another American in a political campaign, it's a farce.
Well, it wasn't so much a political campaign. That's a charity. The Clinton Group is basically a charitable organization.
But they're going to take it as a political thing.
Yeah, they're taking it as a political, but it's largely charitable. But Lawrence, I think your question was good. It was valid, and we absolutely agree with your point that you take.
We don't disagree
with
that.
So a question...
But I think the more important thing is the weight of the influence of this group and their support of the radical aspects, the killing of Charlie Hebdo, the killing of people left and right who oppose, and the killing of people in their own country regularly on the clock is where we should look at. And do we want to keep that alliance? If Hillary comes out and says, I'm going to cut off the alliance to Saudi Arabia, we can get our oil and our right from here. We don't need to keep sucking it out of that place. Go ahead.
Lawrence, what do you think about George W. Bush holding hands and taking money from the king of Saudi Arabia?
While he was president.
While he was president.
I think you're making your usual attempt and effort to divert attention to what I brought up as the subject of Hillary Rodham Clinton.
We answered your question, Lawrence. We absolutely answered your question. We took agreement. It seems that if we agree with you, you're
not
happy.
So
as a consequence, just if you can, would you answer the question I asked?
Yeah.
What do you think about George W. Bush taking campaign money and also holding hands?
Maybe Lawrence wants the Saudis. He wants to keep that relationship.
Yeah. So, Lawrence, we answered your question. Could you answer ours, please?
Yeah. You want the Saudis as our friend.
Oh, am I back on?
Yes.
Yes. I think everyone does it, and it's okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your call, Lawrence. We'll see you. Okay. So we'll continue with our little audio that we have here.
Yeah.
And I appreciate his comment there.
They tend to increase lawlessness as a means of complaint about their conditions. In Paris, we are already seeing car burnings. Any non-Muslim action offends Islam and results in uprisings and threats, such as in Amsterdam and in other Western cities, with opposition to Muhammad cartoons and films exposing Islam. Such tensions are seen daily, particularly in Muslim sections in Guyana, India, Israel, Kenya, and Russia.
And it's interesting. They classify Israel as having 16% population of Muslims. So they do have a substantial population, more than twice what France has.
It really matters when she says Muslims. She does not separate out the Sunni from the Shia, and there is a difference.
Now there is a difference, and they're killing each other over that difference. They're killing Muslims.
Right now, in Yemen, the Saudis are taking our airplanes that they purchased from us for the price of oil and blood, and they're killing people in Yemen. And why are they killing? Because the Yemenis and the Houthis are primarily Shia. They're not Sunni. And when the ISIS was going in, they were cutting the heads off of and people making what they called conversions, people swearing that they were Sunni and would be Sunni from here forward, even though they were Shia. And now that the Iranian government has supported the attacks on Tikrit and those other places, which has now driven out ISIS and putting ISIS under the grave, and they're conducting some retaliation and some vengeance. But vengeance is the way of the Middle East. Except that in the case of the Shia, they tend not, they don't, they treat people in the Western mode. The women are treated, they can dress as they choose, they're not forced to wear the special garb, and so forth. So the Iran is not the enemy, not nearly the enemy that Saudi Arabia is. So we've got another caller.
Yes, we have another caller. We have John from Sarasota to weigh in. John, good morning. Welcome to the Morning Edge.
Good morning, fellas. I had to call in about Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, etc. First of all, one of the great hypocrisies over the last few years is that the largest shareholder in News Corp, you know, a.k.a. their news division is Fox News, was a Saudi. You know, he had 10%. He was the largest single shareholder, and I think in the last 6 months or year he's not been the largest shareholder.
Who are you talking about? I'm sorry, I missed it.
He's a News Corp.
Okay, but News Corp. Who's the largest shareholder?
Saudi Arabia.
Was a Saudi.
Okay.
I think his name was Sheikh Alawid, and he owned 10% of News Corp. And the stunning hypocrisy about Sean Hannity going on about, you know, the Clinton Foundation. Look, if I was running the Clinton Foundation, I would take money from almost anybody if it would solve, you know, diseases in Africa, if it would put clean water in Africa, if it would set up schools, you know. You have to imagine, you know, that Hillary's been thinking about running for president for several years now, so you have to imagine their books are clean. They've probably gone over them with a, you know, just with a microscope.
Now, do you suppose...
And if whether you're the Carter Center or whether you're the Clinton Foundation, if indeed what you're doing is trying to help rebuild Haiti or trying to go into the worst parts of this earth and relieve suffering and poverty, et cetera, et cetera, sure, I would accept money from the Saudis.
That's
you know,
an excellent
we're
point.
We're not going to change their culture overnight. So to me, that's just a preposterous argument. And anybody who's going to vote against, who's going to either vote Democrat or Republican based upon all this silly notion about emails and, you know, mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton and what kind of personality, you know what I'm worried about? Who's going to appoint the next two
Supreme
or three
Court
Supreme
Justice.
Court judges?
Yeah.
Okay? We have Republicans that don't even admit that global warming is real. Okay, we have students graduating from universities with tens of thousands of dollars in debt, and we're roughly the same age. We all went to college for roughly nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's huge problems in this country, not to mention
the student
out of the middle class. I don't give two craps about emails and all this stuff. That's not, to me, what's important in this election.
Well, of course, John, and you really make a good clarification. I was saying if Hillary gets it in her campaign, she should return the money from the Saudis. But in the case of the Clinton Foundation, you're right. It's just money. If they're not dictating how that money is to be used, as they do for the building of the mosques, the Saudis, fine. But I do think the one thing that needs to happen in this country, we've got to start calling out who our enemies are and who really are our friends. And the Saudis have really gotten by with a lot.
No, I agree. And your emphasis on the Saudi connection here in Sarasota, and former Senator and Governor Bob Graham's efforts to expose that. I mean, that's been real, and as far as I'm concerned, that's been really good reporting on your guys' part. I hope you do more of it. There's a reporter down the Sarasota Tribune that's really stayed on it as well. But this stuff with Hillary Clinton, you know, she's wearing sunglasses at Chipotle, you know, all these little idiosyncrasies about her personality. You know, this is what really scares me. Okay, if the Republicans retain the Senate, retain the House, okay, and we get a Republican president. Just remember what 90,000 votes for Nader did in Florida in 2000. Okay, Al Gore won the general election with 500,000 votes. If he would have taken Florida, if there would have been a statewide recount, we would have never invaded Iraq. Now imagine if that wouldn't happen. All this other amazing amount of suffering probably wouldn't have occurred. ISIS, all this other thing. because Gore would have gone into Afghanistan, but he would have never used the pretense of 9/11 to invade Iraq.
You know,
that's why these elections are so important. Okay.
Well, people are very cavalier, and Democrats in particular. Well, Hillary's going to win, you know. That's the attitude.
I don't know.
And they're saying already that Rubio's positioning himself as a vice presidential candidate for Jeb. Jeb is the dog in the background that's going to bite us the most, and what's he going to do? He's going to reveal what happened in 2000, that he was complicit in stealing an election along with the Supreme Court. I mean, and then, as you say...
But you know the mainstream media is probably not going to touch that, Boggy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
right now you've got a situation, the impression you have is these clowns are running around, I'm good, look at me, I can steal it, I can get it, I've got money behind me and so forth. The really big money, they're going to try to get Jeb through the primary in halfway decent fashion, shove him in there, bring Rubio in. Well, he can't come from the same state, so they're probably bring John Kasich.
Or Kasich, right.
They've
got Florida and Ohio. I mean, Hillary worries me, and you know, okay. and the mainstream media is, you know, boy, the Republicans have really worried.
John, your comment on Hillary is good. It's well found as far as Saudi Arabia. Let's see if we can hear a little bit more of this clip before we finish up. Your comments were excellent.
Just hang in there a minute.
I really appreciate it.
Hang on, John.
So we're going
to
play a little bit more, and just for thoughts, we stay kind of on topic.
Another minute. Hold on.
Okay, you want me to stay on the phone?
Stay on, yeah.
Nations can expect hair trigger rioting, jihad militia formations, sporadic killings, and the burnings of Christian churches and Jewish synagogues, such as in Ethiopia. At 40%, nations experience widespread massacres, chronic terror attacks, and ongoing militia warfare, such as in Bosnia, Chad, and Lebanon. From 60%, nations experience unfettered persecution of non-believers of all other religions, including non-conforming Muslims, sporadic ethnic cleansing, use of Sharia law as a weapon, and jizya, the tax placed on infidels, such as in Albania, Malaysia, Qatar, and Sudan. After 80%, expect daily intimidation and violent jihad, some state-run ethnic cleansing, and even some genocide, as these nations drive out the infidels and move toward 100% Muslim.
So Iraq used to have a Christian population, and they lived in peace. After George W. Bush attacked Iraq, mm-hmm. removed Saddam Hussein, we lost the Christian population there. No longer was there tolerance.
Well, you do realize, you know, John, you know too, and I do, that Saddam Hussein was a secular Sunni, which is unusual. His military were all secular Sunni. And when ISIS came in, the secular Sunni generals and military were recruited for ISIS. So who directed the Sunni situation in that circumstance, do you guess?
Well, again, it was the Shia Prime Minister Maliki who failed to live up to the agreement to try to incorporate the Sunnis in his government, mm-hmm. and it alienated the Sunnis, which created a very fertile situation for the radical Sunnis to come in and
But they were the organizers. So the Sunni radicals, Sharia Sunnis, used these generals to direct the fighting, which was very effective. They were remarkably effective. They were like military leaders that we turned away when we invaded Iraq. We refused to use them. Very curious behavior on our part, and that's been a stain on why so many died on both sides.
And one final comment, because I guess somebody else wants to get in here.
No, they're gone.
We're at the end. You can finish up here.
One alarming thing is that Senator Cobb, this newly elected senator from Arkansas, who sponsored this letter of these 40-some-odd senators.
That's Cotton. Tom Cotton.
In the last week, he just came right out and said it. He said we should bomb the facilities in Iran. You know, he said we did it. Under Clinton, he said we did Desert Fox and we bombed Hussein's nuclear potentiality. And Cotton in the last 7 days has come out on a radio show or somewhere and said we ought to bomb the nuclear facilities in Iran. I mean, are you insane?
Of course he is insane. You know, this clown who's too
and
much...
And that's what will happen if we get a Republican president, I believe.
Yeah,
I believe we're going to have a huge war in the Mideast,
What this will do is you want the price of your gasoline to go through the roof? That's how they'll do that, because then your supplies will dry up. The Iranian supply, the Russian connection will be affected. Russia will take sides against us, and suddenly your cost of living will go through the roof. Inflation will be crushing, and now you've got the ad running around by Ron Paul saying there's a very terrible crisis about to hit us, and the crisis would be, as you say, John, what would it be?
Fuck, the
Republican president, wouldn't it?
Right, no. I mean, Ken, imagine a Republican president with Republican Senate, Republican House, and you have about six or seven members of the Supreme Court who are all over 70 years old. Okay? And it just, and when you see what happens with Citizens United and with the repeal of some of the civil rights law in the 60s, imagine what a 5-4, but imagine what a 6-3-7-2 conservative Supreme Court would do. I'll remind you, the Reconstruction period after the Civil War, lasted 100 years.
Yep.
Okay? So we lost 100 years. Also, imagine, again, the other example is, imagine if Gore had been elected president, we would have never invaded Iraq, and all these consequences would have not fallen.
Thank you, John.
Yes,
and we have to go.
No debt. No recession, and we would have Al Gore leaving us with a world a little bit better, to put it mildly, and you wouldn't have lost so much money in the stock market. But we didn't do that. We let a 5-4 decision in the Supreme Court.
You're listening to 1490 AM, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
And thank you for listening to The Morning Edge. We'll be back on Friday.
Yeah, with Dennis Mailey.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. It is now up to the full U.S. Senate to take up a bill that gives Congress authority to review any final deal on Iran's nuclear program.
The action moves to the full Senate now that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee has approved the bill by a vote of 19-0. Committee Chairman Senator Bob Corker says the goal of the bill is clear.
I think all of us would like to see a strong negotiated agreement that ensures that Iran does not get a nuclear weapon.
Senator Robert Menendez says this bill will do that.
Congress must have oversight responsibility, and this legislation provides it.